Millions of formerly incarcerated people across the country were eligible to vote in the 2020 election, thanks to new laws in at least 13 states that have passed in recent years. But some new reporting suggests that relatively few of them actually did. Nicole Lewis is a staff writer for the Marshall Project, a news organization that focuses on criminal justice. Nicole, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure. And first of all, tell me about what some states have been doing to restore voting rights for people who've been in prison. What's that look like right now?
Sure. So over the past several years, there's really been a sea change around felony disenfranchisement laws. And so many states have started to rethink the way that we take these rights away from people who have felony convictions. And so, you know, we've seen an expansion of the number of people who are on probation or parole, who've gotten out of prison, are now eligible to vote. Florida may be the most sort of well-known example of just restoring voting rights through an amendment. It was sort of curtailed by the legislature. In some cases, it's executive orders restoring rights. And in some cases, the legislature has taken it upon themselves to change the laws altogether.
Red states and blue states.
That's correct.
So you dug into the voter rolls in four different states in particular, Nevada, Kentucky, Iowa, and New Jersey. And when you did that, what did you find?
What we found was that no more than one in four of the eligible people, based on the law changes, re-registered in time for the 2020 election. And that rate is much, much lower than the registration rate for the general public, which hovers around 75% pretty much every year.
And you say that most of the people whose rights were recently restored actually didn't even know it. Why is that?
That's right. So a lot of the times when we talk about formerly incarcerated voters, when we look at registration and turnout based on the limited data that we have, there's this narrative that formerly incarcerated people don't turn out, they don't vote. And I think it makes it very, very easy to assume that they're just simply not interested, right? That lack of turnout is a representation of disinterest on their part. But when we dug a little bit deeper and we looked into the laws and we started talking to the people who were actually working to register these folks, what we found is that not a single state that we looked at, right, actually required the agencies that work with formerly incarcerated people. So whether that be the Department of Corrections, the Department of Probation and Parole, in some cases, right, the Secretary of State might have a list. None of those agencies were actually required to notify people. And so this is a huge deal when we're talking about felony disenfranchisement laws, because for so long, voting with a felony conviction, even if you were out of prison, could mean going back to prison. So people really need to know that now they're eligible and they won't face that risk or they won't face that penalty. And so if we don't tell them anything, you know, that idea that it's illegal to vote with a felony conviction still persists.
So what's the outreach like? I mean, are groups starting to realize that if you don't do the sort of voter education that you're talking about, that people aren't going to register?
Yeah, so the voter registration drives have been sort of mixed. And so we really looked and were interested in what people were doing leading into the 2020 election, right? So it's a big pivotal moment in our country. And most of the work was left to political organizers who were already doing kind of get out the vote work more generally in their communities. They're hampered a little bit by the pandemic, of course, in 2020. You know, formerly incarcerated people can be much harder to find, and they have no voting history. So we don't have, like, a last known address or a sort of record for the last place they registered. So they had to really be creative, you know, using social media, trying where they could to get lists from the corrections departments or the Secretary of State, in some cases going to halfway houses and doing outreach that way. It was really a myriad of strategies, you know, persuading certain agencies to say, hey, actually, what if you just send everybody on probation a letter? That would really help us out. And so, you know, progress was really mixed, but it looked like a lot of on-the-ground work to really dispel those myths and encourage people to say, you know, this is actually really important for you and for your community.
So education and outreach important, but how much of this is about people not being interested? And I know you kind of, I don't want to say dismissed that idea before, but to some extent, I think people who have been incarcerated must feel alienated from society and that, you know, participating in the political process, it doesn't work or it's something that they're not interested in.
Absolutely. So I think that it actually is really important to think about how these people have been alienated because of their experiences with the justice system. And so, you know, we don't ever want to say, or I felt like the narrative around, you know, people who are formerly incarcerated don't turn out and don't vote because they're not interested. And that's the sort of, you know, final point was incomplete. And so my reporting helped to sort of build, flesh that out, right? And so we do find, and we do hear all the time, that people feel alienated by the justice system. They feel like their voices don't matter, their vote doesn't count. They have a sense that they don't have the same amount of power or agency. And so for many people, right, even when you're faced with an organizer who's saying you can vote for the first time, isn't this exciting? They may say, you know, hey, no, I'm not interested. I'm not going to do that. In some cases, I also heard that people were very cautious because they are fearful of any kind of retaliation from the state. And so these are particularly people who are on probation and parole, and they're saying, well, like, I can't vote for the judge or I can't vote for the sheriff. These are law enforcement officials. You know, I'm a little bit worried about what could happen. And again, it just speaks to that fear, their experiences moving through the justice system, and how difficult it is once you get out to kind of overcome and find your place again in, you know, civil society.
Yeah. Now, some people did know their rights were restored and they were interested in getting out and voting on Election Day. What did you hear from those people who got out there and exercised that right?
Yeah, a few of the people that I spoke to for this story were really excited about the possibility of voting for elected officials who oversee the justice system. And so, you know, I'm thinking of one man named Jovan Jackson, who's based in Nevada. And, you know, he just had this clear sense of, this is the first time that someone like me, someone from the community that I come from, you know, there's high rates of poverty, you know, over-policing, actually gets to decide who, you know, makes the laws here, you know, who enforces them. We get to pick the sheriff, and he could see a clear connection into why that makes a difference already in some of the sort of freshman legislators introducing new bills that are directly aimed at lowering criminal penalties for certain crimes. And it's just sort of an opportunity to say, for so long we haven't had a voice, and now we do.
When some of these bills or measures first passed, I know we had spoken on this program about what impact these new voters could have on elections, especially in states like Florida, which you have mentioned already in this conversation. Now that we have some data from 2020, is there any evidence that these new voters did change the outcomes of elections in any way?
So as far as we can tell, there is not. And I will highlight another analysis that happened specifically in Florida. And I believe it was the Tampa Bay Times and the Miami Herald and ProPublica tried to get a sense of, you know, did this new block of voters, you know, swing the presidential election in one way or the other? And what we found was, no, they're not. They may be registered in higher numbers, but turnout, you know, is much sort of lower. Another really important component to this story is that there has been an assumption about who these voters are and how they're going to vote in elections. And I think by and large, the narrative has been that all of these people are Democrats, that any kind of increased voter turnout, any kind of restoration of rights only goes to support the Democrats. And what we found, and this is a separate study that we did looking at the politics of currently incarcerated people. So we did a survey last year. We heard from 8,000 currently incarcerated people spread out all across the country about their political beliefs. And we found there's actually an incredible diversity of political thought behind bars, and that, you know, restoring voting rights to people who are formerly incarcerated doesn't necessarily mean it's going to boost one party or the other. You know, these voters are really up for grabs. They don't have a track record. They don't have a history of voting. And so the issues that speak to them become much more important than any kind of party affiliation.
Nicole Lewis, a staff writer for the Marshall Project, thank you very much.
Thank you.